thank you. It's wonderful to be here again. I thank the organizers for this wonderful meeting. So I'll talk about the about whether the galactic center stars could have formed in situ. So the goals of my talk are to assess the plausibility of in situ formation within the black hole's dynamical sphere of influence. I will argue that star formation is a generic consequence of the AGN phenomenon, and I will briefly discuss some observational tests this in situ formation hypothesis. Now, I would like to say that my talk will be followed by talks by Sergei Nyakshin, right, and by Yuri Levin, and these talks will discuss this model in, I think, much greater detail. This is just an introduction into these issues. Here is star formation in a nutshell. So this is my lecture on star formation because we need it. Stars form from gas. Now gas must overcome four or five barriers, depending on how you look at it, to form a star. So these barriers include a thermal barrier, the Jeans criterion. The gas has to collapse, and it has to cool and collapse under its own gravity to form a star. Now, this usually does not stop the collapse, right? So we know that. So this is not a problem. Next, there is the magnetic barrier. The magnetic barrier again does not stop the collapse. It actually helps to extract angular momentum from the protostar, and it regulates the size of the protostars that are forming in this region. Furthermore, we have the centrifugal barrier. The gas again has angular momentum, and magnetic fields are possibly responsible for extracting angular momentum from the gas. We have the tidal barrier, which is somewhat specific to the galactic center. The gas inside the dynamical sphere of influence of the black hole, and I'll show what it is subject to the tidal field of the black hole. This tidal field shears the gas into streams. We know that to form a star, we cannot do it from a very thin stream. The gas somehow has to collect and stay in one place. And also, there's of course the supply barrier. If multiple stars are forming in one region, then they are competing for the same gas. And so how big they can grow depends on how much gas they can accrete. So I'm talking about the dynamical sphere of influence of the black hole. So we can see it in this very old. Actually, I had a reference here that is in white, so it disappeared from this plot. Here we see the enclosed mass as a function of radius coming from kinematics in the center of a galaxy, and the enclosed mass is, of course, increases with radius as when we are outside of the dynamical sphere of influence of a black hole. Inside the sphere of influence, it's constant because we are seeing the mass of the black hole. The sphere of influence is about 1 parsec. The density of gas that's necessary for the cloud to be able to collapse, it's about 10 to the 7th per cc at 1 parsec. And it's as much as 10 to the 14 per cc at the location at the radius of SO2. So these are enormous densities. As you know, typical molecular clouds have 10 to the 5 and below. Now, where is molecular gas at the galactic center? This is just a random image that I pulled out. There are many such images. I think this is HCN here. We see the circumnuclear disk that traces the rim of the dynamical sphere of influence. Robin just told us today that there is actually gas in the center, but most of the gas is located 1 parsec away or farther, and at these radii, the gas has binding energies that are about 50 to 100 times larger than the binding energies of stars like SO2. So somehow this factor of 50 to 100 in binding energy must be extracted from the gas to form these stars. So this is the problem with the formation of the galactic center stars. And so people have proposed many different suggestions, and I could have saturated this image by the names from this room, different mechanisms have been proposed by different people, many of whom are here. Some of the mechanisms are more generic, some are not. The problems with the most of them can be classified into two. Either they require a large reservoir of of a population of stars that are sitting somewhere, that are being brought in some way, or they require a frequent modification of the normal state of stars. And by the frequent modification, what I would what I will address that in a moment, I will actually focus on the formation of stars from accretion disk instabilities. But I will just briefly mention what are these different problems with the with some of these specific mechanisms. So, for instance, the diffusion of stars due to the encounters with other stars, which is so-called relaxation or mass aggregation, takes place on a timescale of about 10 to the 8 years. Notice that there is this parameter log lambda here. This log lambda is a Coulomb logarithm, and the Coulomb logarithm is actually rather small, close to the black hole, smaller than what we learn in textbooks. So that's 10 to the 8 years is, of course, longer than the age of the stars that we're looking at. And I'm going through this only because I'm the first sort of theory speaker here. So I felt obliged to go through this. Now, this is what the density of stars at the galaxy center might look like. This is a Fokker-Planck model. The various color lines here are the dwarfs and the neutron stars. And then in the central region, the density of stars is dominated by, or is expected to be dominated by, stellar mass black holes, which segregate into this region because they are the heaviest. So now, perhaps these stellar mass black holes are perturbing the stars, perhaps the stars are radiating the binding energy that is imparted to them from the perturbations. The typical timescale for collisions is 10 to the 5 years. So perhaps if something could be modifying the stellar evolution on every 10 to the 5 years, stellar evolution can be modified every 10 to 10 years by interactions with other stars, whether it's collisions or mergers or whatever. But here I'm showing a plot, and I don't know if everybody can see that I borrowed from Fred Razia's group. So this is a plot from Natasha Ivanova and Josh Faber. They did simulations of stellar collisions, where they took the product of the collision of a stellar mass black hole and a star, then took the star out and did stellar evolution on this star and looked at the time scale in which the star settles back onto the main sequence, and a time scale within which the star is actually much hotter and brighter than it will be on the main sequence is quite short, 100 years. So it's too short explain the presence of very young or to be what Andrea called a star masquerading as a youth. I will not go into the other direction, which is the migration of stars as members of the clusters that may or may not have intermediate mass black holes in them and so on. So I'll just now focus on something else, and that is the in situ formation. I'm looking for something that will be generic, not to the galaxy center right now and only now, but to all galaxies and all active galaxies, which are those that have gas in their nuclei, and that is recurring. So the star formation mechanism should be something that is intermittent and that possibly favors massive stars. Here is a very large-scale image from a simulation of Keiichi Wada that shows, this is kiloparsec on the side, what the distribution of gas in the center of a spiral gas-rich galaxy might look like. So there are many, many clouds. They are turbulent. They are the gas is perturbed by supernovae and by the motion of gas in the galactic potential. There are cavities everywhere and so on. So it's quite a messy situation. But in the very center, the gas is circularizing around the central point mass or the central mass concentration, the center of the bulge. And so if we think about these clouds floating around the galaxy, around the central region of the galaxy, a cloud comes around the black hole, and it comes close to the black hole or close to the central cusp of stars. It's sheared into streams. These streams eventually fall back onto the radius where of the closest approach. And so after some time, after several of these oscillations, the gas will make a disk around the center. So we're really interested in the disk that form around the black hole within the dynamical sphere influence of the black hole. So that sphere is one parsec. So we're looking for disks that are a fraction of a parsec in size. And this has to be happening given that these clouds are going in random directions. And every now and then, one cloud like that has to hit right through the dynamical sphere influence of the black hole. So this might seem like a nice story that I'm telling you, but in fact, it's a very generic condition in other galaxies. And we know this from extragalactic water masers. So there are a number of examples of amazing warm molecular disks that are seen at 22 gigahertz and other frequencies. So there's gas in nearly Caperian rotation around the black hole that's almost the same in mass as that at the center of our galaxy. This, of course, was used to infer the mass of the black hole, etc. So by seeing the masers in this, what do we know really about the gas? Well, what we know about the gas is that it's dense. It has to be as dense as 10 to the 7 particles per cc to guarantee collisional excitation of the rotational levels that are amazing. But it has to be not as dense as 10 to the 10 to prevent thermalization. The temperature in the gas has to be greater than 400 Kelvin. So this means that this is warm molecular gas. Again, the radii at which the disks are seen are a fraction of a parsec. And also some of the results on the X-ray absorption measures in these disks indicate that they have very high column densities, like 10 to the 25. This is the work of Matt et al. And so all of this put together gives us a sort of a self-consistent picture of what this is the form of how gas might be distributed at the center of a galaxy. There are certain open, of course, theoretical problems here. What keeps the gas warm? It could be irradiation by X-rays from the central AGN, or it could be spiral shocks in the disk, or it could be perhaps that the stars are forming in the disk, and I'll come to that in a moment, and are ionizing the gas in the disk, or it could be the dissipation of turbulence, or although for this, nominally, one would need a very high alpha. So that's not really very plausible, or that could be a magnetic reconnection of this corona that's hitting the surface. Requisite densities for the collapse of clouds inside the dynamical sphere of the black hole cannot be sustained in these in individual clouds, but they can be sustained in this disk, which is a quasi-steady state. So the disk fragments when the so-called Tumbi Q parameter is less than one, and incidentally, the parameter actually is just about one at the outer edge of these amazing disks. If we put these parameters that are pretty well constrained from the conditions for mazing. The genes mass, which determines the initial size of the object that's collapsing in a disk, is about a solar mass of 2. So that's, of course, smaller than the mass of the B stars that we're trying to explain here. And here is just borrowed from the planetary formation literature, just a mental picture of what this might look like. So this is a disk which these authors have set up to undergo fragmentation all at once. There are a bunch of point masses that are accreting here the gas from the disk. So going from a disk that does not have any point masses in it to that's just gas to a bunch of accreting nuclei, this is probably the wrong actually picture to have in the mind, because always there will be there will always be one region that is going to be the first one to collapse in the disk and to make the first little self-gravitating planet, I would call it, in the disk. And so what happens then, and this is again, I'll tell you why this is slightly wrong picture, again, borrowed from planetary formation. This is here accretion disk, surface density in a disk is in a grayscale, and the planet is accreting from this annulus. So a planet can accrete all the material that is around that belongs to this region around the black hole in the disk that in which the material can travel around the disk relative to the planet, which is of course star in our case. The material travels around and comes close to the star, it can be accreted. And here we see that the star is here, and the material travels around the disk. Why does the material travel? Because there is differential rotation. The angular velocity of the material at larger distances is lower, so the material drifts backwards relative to the star inside. The angular velocity is larger, so the material drifts faster. And part of that material that's in the co-orbital annulus is accreting onto this protostar, and the protostar is growing, right? So the protostar is not only, well, doesn't have the mass of just the mass of the initial collapse region, but also it will potentially suck in all the mass from this ring in which it is embedded. So the material is arriving into the Roche lobe at a rate which is about 10 to the minus 4 solar masses per year, again for these amazing disks. This is quite a high rate. If a single protostar is accreting at this rate, then it could basically grow to a very large mass, which is given by the so-called isolation mass, which is the mass of this entire co-orbital annulus that is available to the star for accretion. This isolation mass would seem to be quite large, but believe that it is not going to be. The star cannot grow to such a large mass because not a single accreting core can receive such a large accretion rate. Not a single accreting core can receive it. The Roche lobe of the star. This is this small region here, of course, which is here blown up. So this is the Roche lobe of the star that's growing in a disk. It will keep receiving material. Material comes in like that. It circularizes. But the protostar will have an accretion disk of its own. And this accretion disk will be susceptible to subfragmentation because it cannot really transport as much mass as it's arriving from larger radii onto the surface of the protostar. And so eventually, what's going to happen is that the disk will become unstable. It will break into multiple cores inside the same Roche lobe. Instead of having a single, very, very, very massive star inside the Roche lobe, a bunch of smaller stars will form. And this is something that is actually reminiscent of what could be the, well, it's something that makes one thinking as to whether it could be the origin of, let's say, the IRIS 13 or IRIS 16 clusters. So this is these are groups of IRIS 13 is a group of about seven luminous supergiants here. That appear to be orbiting the black hole in unison, and that's quite puzzling because why would their position be correlated? Why would these stars be moving together? Well, one possibility is that they are the remnant core of a young cluster, just like the arches that fell into the dynamical sphere influence that was disrupted, and so just the core remained, and that's what it is. The other possibility is that, in fact, these stars form from all the gas in a transient, now no longer existent accretion disk that was present around the black hole. So the material from this accreted into the Roche lobe and formed stars, and now they're there. Now, of course, the stars will not sit in this little region forever, and they will not sit in this region forever because of two effects. One of them is so-called evaporation. So the scattering of stars by other stars will cause stars to be ejected from this region, and they will as soon as they're ejected, then they're susceptible to the tidal field because they're no longer protected by the Roche lobe, right? Inside the Roche lobe, they are. subject to their own gravity, but outside the Roche lobe, now they're moving in the potential of the black hole. I didn't put the numbers here, but I'll give you an estimate. So the orbital time for these objects is probably a few thousand years, so that's how much it takes the IRS-13 to go around the black hole. The number of stars here is currently 7 or 10 or something like that, but it could have been a bit larger. So we're talking about perhaps 10 to the 5 years for the evaporation time, which is still quite short. Also, the time scale on which this such an object would be sheared around the black hole is again about 10 to the 5 years. So this is really pushing it in terms of whether the cluster would have maintained its integrity over such a period. I think it's very important to, I know that's coming in the future, to actually get full 6D proper motions for these stars and really understand whether the stars in these clusters and those that are, next to them can be integrated backwards and whether one can find whether they all result from the same location. Let's see here. Now these clusters can migrate through this, and I will not go into detail. They can migrate probably quite efficiently. Furthermore, could they also have migrated to the center to form the S-stars? Well, it is possible, certainly. This is really not very scientific. The following thing will not be very scientific, in the sense that I don't really have a theory for this yet, but the S-stars are very eccentric. Of course, the objects forming in a circular accretion disk are expected to be circular, which is indeed quite a large puzzle. But then again, the extrasolar planets also form in circular accretion disks, and they're also very eccentric. So there must be something generic that operates in these systems where one has objects forming from gravitational collapse in accretion disks that is conducive to the excitation of eccentricities, which could be the interactions between the planets and the disks, or the scattering between the planets, or some resonances, etc. And so these are my conclusions. Thank you.
Questions? Brad?
Yes. Brad and Phil, I'm going to show that in fact the tidal tails that form in the disk by one object. So there'll be a wave that forms in the disk. This wave then is going to trigger the collapse in other parts of the disk, which will then lead to the formation of many of objects outside of the initial Roche lobe.
I agree with the analogy from Vegas. Do you know of any evidence that there's actually development going on about carbon scale?
As far as I know, there is no direct evidence for that. But then again, there is still this puzzle as to what really heats the gas. And again, there aren't really very self-consistent theories for what heats the gas. So perhaps. I'm not sure, but some very rough back of the envelope estimates tell me that stellar mergers in the disk are going to be rather rare.
Okay.
just because the stars are rather small and there isn't enough time. Was that the question? Or? That could be happening in quasar disks and so on, but it doesn't explain the galaxy center stars. So, I thought that there were 80%. Oh, I see. I see. Well, thank you for pointing it out.
Right.
Well, if you postulate that the initial mass of a cluster had been larger, then you would actually have easier time beating these time limits.
Yeah, he's making the cluster right at 0.1 parsec, so. Well, you don't need the migration.
But the migration can take place, yeah. Because the gas in this can be recycled to help migrate. It's an imbalance in the co-orbital region is sufficient to induce very rapid migration. Unless they were, pardon? Gravitationally bound. So that's a major puzzle. Are they gravitationally bound? And Jessica is working on that. Is looking for we really need to know whether they're gravitationally bound. And for that, I think we need to know the sixth space-based coordinate.
Then even if there is an intermediate mass, that hole, it must be extremely massive to bind this. With 10,000 solar masses, you run into the limit of Mach 3 of the proper motion that we saw.
I asked you also as an example in that you see that
well, there's lots of gas and dust associated.
Last question. Okay, well, I think we'll have to break this off here. Let's thank Milos again. on X2.